All right. Thank you, Matt. Bill, do you want to set it up? So I now have the distinct pleasure to introduce our first keynote speaker. She serves as Cisco's Chief Security Officer for its global value chain. In this capacity, she develops and oversees the deployment of Cisco's strategy to assess, monitor, and continuously improve the security of its global value chain. She serves or has served on the Cisco Cybersecurity Board, Risk and Resiliency Operating Committee, Global Compliance Governance Committee, and the ECO Board. She's also been a leader in various international security, supply chain, and sustainability standards, and information and communication industry consortia. She will be speaking to us today about driving security across the value chain, or to put it another way, know who is touching your stuff. On a personal note, I first ran into her in meetings of the Open Group Trusted Technology Forum about 5 or 6 years ago, working on the Open Trusted Technology Provider Standard for supply chain security insurance, and found her to be one of the most gracious and intelligent people that I have met, a truly dangerous combination. And we also share a little bit of the Irish, although mine is by birth, she was clever enough to marry it. It's with great pleasure that I ask you to join me in welcoming Edna Conway.
Good morning. Thank you ever so much for inviting me to this. I can't tell you how many times I actually called Erin and said, "You want me to come talk at what?" I am not qualified to come speak to you all. So I assure you that of the people sitting in this room, it is me who is in awe of what you all do. So with that said, let me give you a little bit of background on where I think we sit today. So if you think about where we started, right, the platform for information and communications used to be a very narrow physical set, right? It was a network, everything passed through the network, and it was local, and it was devices. And then we got all excited because we could go to wide area networks from local area networks. Well, think about where we are today. So I think today where we are is those shackles have really broken completely. They're gone. And what we live in, I think, is a world that I like to call a digital vortex. And it's really a world where everything is connected, but also has independent compute functionality, which to me is really a scary process when you think about it from a security perspective, right? So what I call this is this digital vortex, and what it means is we're pulled to a center, and that center is really a place where we have everything connected, and it's exponentially expanding our reach. But here's the other issue. The flip side is it's exponentially expanding the ability of others to reach us. So I'm going to tell you something in advance that please bear with me. I am struggling mightily because I'm used to having a walking mic. And what Erin didn't tell you is while I married into the Irish, my name is Edna Maria Cristina Pizzoni, so I cannot stand still. So I'm going to have a hell of a time standing in front of this mic, and I'm probably going to hit it at least 3 times because if you tie my hands behind my back, I will be unable to speak. So I think there's something else that's coming to be in this digital vortex, right? And so we've all talked a lot about the convergence of information technology and operational technology. However, what we're seeing in the digital vortex is a new convergence. It's this 3 dimensions because we're adding the human element. And that adds really a whole nother set of exciting opportunities for us in terms of capabilities in a digital world, but a whole new set of risks from a security perspective. But the exciting thing is every aspect of life, and this says is changing, it's changed. So I have a child who's going to be 31 years old. Of course, I had him when I was 11. And the reality is that he cannot function without a digital mindset. It is amazing to me. I got a long tirade the other day because I sent him something I wanted him to read on email. I was like, when did email become outdated? He said, oh, mother, please. So I said, fantastic, thank you. Remember who gave you birth. But think about these things, right? I mean, we're now in the point where if you start to look at this, this is not novel anymore. Now the question is, who's going to survive? Who are the winners in these arenas? There are competitors in each of these arenas. They're no longer digital disruptors. It's the norm. And so what we're seeing is this digital vortex is forming the platform for all aspects of civilization. So it's driving certainly enterprise-level business, but it's driving government and also our daily lives. And that's a really big difference. So we talked a little bit about this three-dimensional aspect, but where I want to go today is to talk to you about the need to really build security in to a gross, large area, and that includes your business operations. It includes your culture. Remember that human element, right? We all know that the ticket to success in security is us, the carbon-based units. What's the problem with security? Us, the carbon-based units. So culture is very important. And then finally, my world, the third-party ecosystem. And you know, there was a day when we used to think about there was us internal to our own environment, and then there was them. The third-party ecosystem in a digital world is us. There's no longer a dividing line from a security perspective, and that's something we really need to be aware of. The other thing is, I think we don't spend enough time thinking about the why. So I see lots of folks talking with great expertise about the how are we going to get attacked? What are the attack surfaces? What is the methodology that's going to be used? I think you need to step back and also think in a risk-based approach. Why? Why are people wanting to come at us? And your response needs to be a risk-based, tailored approach, understanding the why. And so you're all intimately familiar with the many aspects, quite frankly, of the way in which we can all be jeopardized. But I'm going to encourage all of us to step back for a moment and think about the why. So here's what we embarked upon a bit ago in my enterprise, and we started to think about how we would answer these questions. And more importantly, we boldly went to our customers and partners and said, we want you to ask us these questions and let's talk about the answer. And by the way, we may turn around and come to you and ask you the same questions so that we can understand together. The prior speaker, who I hadn't had the privilege of meeting, but I think his name was Matt, talked a lot about collaboration and the need to do that. We cannot survive if we don't collaborate in a digital economy. So the answer to these questions from my perspective is, what's the goal, right? Go right back to the why. Why are we doing this? And the goal is for each of us to have the reputation and integrity and the meaningful technology behind us to look at our customers and look at our partners and say, we're driving the ability to look and say, with great degree of humility, but some bolstering facts, that we are providing you with something that has integrity and we've thought about it wholly, so end to end across its life cycle. So, you know, supply chain folks always say, you know, you're only as good as your weakest link, and it's really true. So if we have fantastic technology, but we aren't thinking about how we first design it, or we aren't thinking about that, what happens on end of life, we do not have a comprehensive approach. So what we embarked on was a challenge to think three-dimensionally, right? So I found that we have experts in so many areas. The physical security folks may not be talking to the information security colleagues. And the folks who know information security may never have been in an operations environment. They might not have seen a SCADA system. They may never have been on a factory plant floor. This is an opportunity in value chain security to move the needle. And if any of you are familiar with, as I suspect you all are, any of the changes that we see in regulations and guidance, the NIST Cybersecurity Framework Draft 1.1 came out. It clearly has a statement about what they call cyber supply chain risk management. They mean the value chain, not just the manufacturing supply chain. So they too are thinking holistically. We see NERC actually working right now based on a mandate from FERC to come up with a new set of SIP regulations that articulate what? cyber supply chain risk management. So the eyes of the world are opening to the fact that we're in a community, and that community can touch us. So even though I'm Italian, I'm not sure I like being touched all that much. Huh? So here's a question that a lot of people ask me. That sounds fantastic. And who's in this ecosystem that you keep talking about? And this is not comprehensive, but it's an important point. It's diverse. And when I talk a little bit about an architecture approach, you have to keep in mind that the architecture needs to be comprehensive and flexible because you have diverse members. So let me just build this out. Imagine the need to write an architecture that allows you to embrace a set of security goals, because an architecture really should not be prescriptive, if at all possible. It should seek to allow the members of that third-party ecosystem to come to the table, figure out what best fits in their business environment to achieve a goal you articulate. I mean, there are some things that always have to be prescriptive, right? I mean, if you're a pen tester, you need to know how to do pen testing. If you're going to write code, you need to understand how to write code and where to put a secure development lifecycle and product security requirements in to your development aspects. But there needs to be a lot of flex in how you do that, because what I ask, for example, of a cloud service provider who's in one of our cloud offerings might look very different than what I ask of a printed circuit board supplier. Right? I mean, I have a set of requirements on inner core layers. If you talk about inner core layers to anybody other than a printed circuit board supplier, they don't know what you're talking about, right? Is it a nuclear facility? What core? So you need to be flexible enough to recognize that you have to work with a variety of folks. Here's what has troubled me for a while. And excuse me, I got so excited I hit the button twice. This bothers me. This should bother you. So Verizon just came out with its 2017 report. Now, you know as well as everybody that we cannot identify a root cause for every single incident. However, for those that we can, between 75 and 80% of the causation emanates from the third-party ecosystem. For the last 7 years, that hasn't changed. Let me say that again. For the last 7 years, it hasn't changed. I understand in the world of IoT and expanding devices and the digital vortex, maybe the denominator is increasing, but for any of you who work in an enterprise, if you went and showcased this to your leadership, what kind of a response would you get? I know what I'd get. I'd get, thank you, it's been a pleasure knowing you, Edna. So the reality is we need to embrace that third-party ecosystem. Here's some additional statistics out of a Deloitte Global survey. They found, obviously, that 87%, they were looking only at third-party incidents. Over the last 2 years, 87%, and this was a 2016 study. 87% had a disruptive event from their third-party ecosystem, but the scarier numbers are the 28% were major disruptions and another 11 were actually complete failures. So the data's out there to suggest we better be paying attention to those who are in that outer circle of our world. So what's the mission then? The mission is for us together to drive pervasive security throughout that third-party ecosystem. And that ecosystem is different for all of us, but all of us have it, right? We all have such an ecosystem. So we started on a journey to begin to talk to that third-party ecosystem to give you some perspective. So we have about 72,000 employees. We have a fantastic organization that I have the privilege of being a part of. Our chief information security officer is a member of that organization and protects our network. We've got about 2.1 million people in the third-party ecosystem that are touching us in some way and our solutions, and just about 113,000 members of that third-party ecosystem. So the challenge is one that is not for the faint of heart. How do you translate something to make it easy? A lot of these folks are operational. They're not security experts. So three threats. These will be very obvious to you, but make it plain and make it simple. So I started with this, and it made sense to all my colleagues who I had the privilege of working with and learning from who were experts in security. And then I went to the operations folks, and they were like, yeah, that's great. What does that mean? So we translated that into actual exposures. And the exposures are, we're worried about any kind of tainted solution, any kind of counterfeit solution. We're also worried about protecting intellectual property. Why? If you get the intellectual property, your ability to attack is much faster and, quite frankly, far less costly. And then finally, we're worried about information security breaches in that third-party ecosystem that could negatively come back and cause taint or counterfeit or loss of IP. So all of a sudden, it became real and practical. The other thing I really insisted on and had lots of folks to help us with was that we have this three-dimensional approach. First, think comprehensively across that life cycle. Don't leave any part out, number one. Number two, think about, you don't always have to do physical security, logical security, and deploy security technology in every place at every time, but think about what you have in your bag of tricks, right? What's available in your portfolio that you can deploy in the right place in the right time to attack those exposure areas. And then finally, much as we heard already earlier this morning, step up, look outside your organization, lift your head up, and participate in the work that's going on at an industry level and at a governmental level to influence it. To influence it so that it makes sense, and quite frankly, to influence it in a public-private partnership so that we can achieve success without putting private enterprise out of business while protecting our governments and our citizens. So I'm not going to dwell on these because I know we're running behind already. And Aaron, you're going to give me the little sign. Okay. But what we did was we identified for folks, we said, okay, we have these threats, we have these exposure areas, what do you want to do? And we incubated this inside the manufacturing supply chain. And then we expanded it out to the next aspects of the value chain. So these were what we identified as the areas of differentiation. I'm not going to read through all of them. But the point is, all of a sudden, you started to have a taxonomy and you started to break it down into pieces so that when you walked over to talk to an ASIC provider and you were thinking with them about the threat areas, there were aspects that you could leverage. So the goal was to really come up with this flexible architecture. So I love showing this because lots of people say, that's interesting. Did you say you were the what? The chief security officer? And I'm happy to tell you that my undergraduate degree is in medieval and Renaissance literature. So if any of you afterwards would like to talk about Arthurian legend, I'm your gal. But the reality is you can actually think about this in a logical way. So none of these domains are difficult to get your arms around, and they're common. And this was built before the NIST cybersecurity framework came out, before we had finished, quite frankly, ISO 20243 and some of the other great work that was being done. And the reality is, what do you want to write within those as your requirements, and how are you going to deploy them across your third-party ecosystem, and how are you going to actually monitor whether or not those third-party ecosystem members are adhering to your requirements or achieving the goals where you've been able to articulate a requirement as an end state rather than a prescriptive methodology. So I struggled for a while to think about how I could connect you all other than standing up here and reminding you that, quite frankly, in a digital vortex, what you do is now touching every aspect of every device that we use every day. And it's only going to grow. But if you think about it in the way I think about life, which is the end-to-end value chain, I started to reach out to some of the third parties just to have fun and said, where's crypto directly involved? Or more importantly, where do we, as the creators of Cisco solutions, deploy cryptography as part of this process? And I discovered that it was already pretty broadly deployed. So if you sit here and think we don't have a role in the value chain, you absolutely do. We are one and the same, in all honesty. And I'm not quite sure why it's not at end of life, and I'm going to go investigate that. But it's clear to me that we're tied at the hip. And look, the last thing that you want to remember is, I don't think, and I don't know if I'll live long enough to get there, we may get there, but today as we sit here, we do not ingest or inhale technology. Okay? Everybody, breathe in the network with me. Do you have connectivity? No. We all have devices. So the reality is that what you're doing needs to be built in to the matrix that supports the connectivity as well as the devices. And so I really want to send the message that a hardware root of trust is something not to be forgotten about. In this day where we all follow shiny objects and everybody's using the word cyber, cyber manifests itself not just in software, but in the physical manifestations of the devices that we utilize to afford all of the great digital vortex opportunities that are now part of our daily living. So I mentioned to you a couple of things about thinking broadly, and I also started to think about where I might have seen cryptography used. This is probably basic to you, but there's cryptography in places that you wouldn't otherwise think about. So think about insertion of immutable identity in chips on boards, right? Really important. And how do you track that identity, by the way? How do you change it? How do you set up key verification? I had the privilege of speaking to NOAA at its IT day a couple of weeks ago here in the DC area, and did some research, and actually some of their atmospheric satellites and some of what they're doing at the ocean level has a high degree of cryptography embedded within it because of the concern that what they're learning may actually be leveraged in a negative way by nation-state actors. So I'm not going to dwell on this for a long time, but the point is you're embedded in the very essence of the digital vortex in which all of us live. So I am hoping that 5 years from now, this conference will be much larger because we're going to need far more expertise in this area as we deploy it more meaningfully across a broader base of both activities and devices. Okay, so I thought I'd have a little bit of fun. I mentioned I have a child, and all of us have something that we remember if you have a child in your life or have had one in your life at any point. And for me, the bane of my existence was not Sesame Street, although I can still say to you, C is for cookie, that's good enough for me. He's 31, I can still remember that. So clearly it was ingrained. But the reality for me was, where's Waldo? This thing drove me nuts. We spent hours looking for Waldo. So I took a picture from the Where's Waldo book. And just to give you a sense of where you're already affecting daily life. So the folks up in the building on the left are at a restaurant and they're using point of sale cryptography on buying their meals. And we've got a bank here and we've got a connected car here. And by the way, there's a little workman up on the top of the red building on the right-hand side who's actually working on the HVAC system, right? Which happens to be in a connected building. Oh, by the way, you're there as well. I could keep going. So if I haven't made the point, let me repeat it. We need you. You are part of the digital vortex. And more importantly, you are setting an embedded capability. So when I talk about driving security technology and physical security as well as information security, you're a core of the technology that needs to be deployed everywhere in a variety of ways. So I wanted to give you a little bit of perspective on something that we're doing at Cisco. We are on our third generation of what we call an anti-counterfeiting chip, which uses cryptography. And our goal was to think not about just the security within the technology itself and the crypto module within it, but let's think about it in a value chain perspective. So we sat down, and I had the privilege of working with some really talented folks at Cisco and said, what we really want to do is, how can we actually make sure that we know what the chip is going on, what board, we can track it, are we tracking the chips physically, what if there's excess chips, a whole bunch of questions, a whole list. And here's our challenge. We want a delivery mechanism. And more importantly, we really want to be able to go back, because anybody in the security arena understands, unlike quality where you want five nines all the time, that would be a lovely goal. security, you're never going to get there. There's always going to be a problem. So it's about risk mitigation. So we wanted to have some forensic traceability built in. So here's what we came up with, and this took, looks very simple, and it took almost 2 years to come up with this process and deploy actively now across the full spectrum of those members of our third-party ecosystem who are either making or transporting or installing on a board this chip. So we've got the chip supplier, we've got the manufacturing partner who actually does the PCBA, and then we have what we call the Cisco backend, which is actually a data compilation as well as identity management technology. So what we started with was we said, okay, we're going to do encrypted chip-specific keying material packages, right? We get that from the supplier right at the outset. You've made the chip, fantastic. We're going to store that. We then go to the Cisco backend and keep it there. We then proceed to actually give chip-level identity information packages assigned to each of those, and we store that. We then, because we're thinking logically, say, well, wait a minute, you want to ship that? We want to check before whether you should ship it to the right person. And we do check that, and then we give an authorization, and it ships to the manufacturing partner. The manufacturing partner tells us they receive it, and what we did was, I'm going to just build this out, as part of our actual test process, so invaded the operations in a fabulous way, so security was no additional steps at the operational floor, we now have unique identities. And then down the road, what we can do is reconciliation. So we can walk up to somebody and say, you know, I see that you loaded a reel. The reel had 200 chips on it, and you just said the reel is end of life, and we don't know where 20 of the chips went. So it was a great process to bring together across the value chain a host of thinking around cryptographic modules in the deployment of an anti-counterfeit chip. So these are just an example, I'm not going to go through them, of some of the key areas I think you need to be aware of if you're dealing in the digital vortex on what's going on, where we're seeing more and more public-private engagement. I'm very hopeful that we're not going to see proliferation of regulations that don't make sense because we're working together better around the world. And then I'll leave you with some experiments that we are working on because I'm a big fan of experimentation and I have the privilege of working with some of the best minds at Cisco and quite frankly across our third-party ecosystem. So I'm not going to dwell on all of these, but I wanted to give you a couple of examples. So it sounds simple, but at the end of the surface mount technology line, we're taking photos, and what we did was the talented folks came up with a software methodology to actually examine the PCBA so we would have, if you will, a golden master that was time-stamped. And using metadata extraction, we use software to do an evaluation that's much faster and, quite frankly, higher degree of quality than human review. And this is a way for us to do forensic analysis. So an example would be this. I know that you can't see what the difference is, but the two red circles, there's a capacitor that's missing, and one of the screws is turned in a different direction than it was when it went out. These are the types of things that give you a higher degree of fidelity and the ability to look at customers and say, I'm driving security throughout the value chain. The other thing we're doing is we're doing a little bit of, you heard me talk about hardware root of trust, you can tell where my heart lies, trying to build obfuscation and authentication with keying right into the chip. I won't dwell on this, but it gives us unique integrated circuit chip IDs. Fantastic way for us to drive cryptography at a root of trust level. And then the other thing is, because I think math needs to be simple, we've been working with some academics to think about a way to put into the chip a derived polynomial expression so that you, what pops up is, if there's a remainder, we know that that's a red flag. It should equal zero. Remainder equals you have a problem, and oh, by the way, we can identify where on the chip to look and see what's gone on with the identity management at that chip level. So I think there are a couple of things that you can do, and I'll just build these out. So you need to understand who's in your value chain first. Know who they are, know what they do for you. Make sure you lift your head up every once in a while and look around the world and see what trends and new technology is out there. I would urge you to join us in demanding a hardware root of trust, and then deploy, we tell this to everybody, a whole host of protection techniques, clearly encryption being among them. Think about the end-to-end life cycle. If you focus too narrowly, you might have missed an opportunity to actually bring together a higher degree of security. And then collaborate radically. That's important across not just enterprises, but with government and academia. So I want to leave you with a little prediction. I think the success of cryptography across the value chains of the future are going to depend on only two employees, a human and a dog. And the human's going to be there to feed the dog, and the dog's going to be there to make sure that the human doesn't touch any of the damn equipment. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much, Edna. That was a great presentation, and I can certainly feel that last point. In a previous life as an engineer in the Navy, I told my techs that worked for me, if you see me even reaching towards a piece of equipment, slap my hand.